Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. We have a medley of stories for you on this very sultry Friday in July. Later in the show, Alex Pfeiffer from the Ames Historical Society will join us to talk about an upcoming lecture on a plane crash that is part of the area's history and other bits of aviation history. Local Talk reporter Greta Anderson prepared a segment on confinement feeding operations near Nevada. But first, we're going to go back to last Saturday when the Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, ICCI, held an all-day event called Revolution Iowa at the Event Center in Des Moines. It was a day devoted to discussing critical issues facing us today, for example, climate, immigration, healthcare, water, and the nature of politics in the U.S. The keynote speakers were former presidential candidate Senator Bernie Sanders and Alicia Garza, one of the founders of Black Lives Matter. Several of us from KHOI were there to bring you coverage. I was there along with Ursula Rudenberg and Joy B. In addition, Ursula's sister, Annette, who was visiting from Minneapolis, was there to help out as well. On Monday's Local Talk, we aired some audio from the Revolution Iowa event, but there was a lot going on there on that day. So we're going to do a follow-up and bring you more voices from other speakers and also from people who were there as participants, supporters, and activists. The Revolution Iowa organizers started the morning with introductory speeches that were a medley of voices articulating the problems that ICCI seeks to address and their vision for change.
CCI Action was formed as an individual political sister organization to Iowa CCI, which is a 42-year-old grassroots organization. We have members across the state, and we believe in empowering our communities to take on big money interests that impact our lives. For example,
when Trump tries to deport immigrant brothers and sisters,
or when the legislature tries to pass anti-immigrant bills like you're not welcome here policy,
when Big Ag tries to suck the life out of rural communities and tries to block common sense water protections,
when they pollute our waters and then make us, the taxpayers, pay for it,
when laws are passed like stand your ground,
we know it's just a license to kill people of color.
We need an increase in minimum wage. We can't survive on $7.25 or $8.75 or $10.10.
When big money starves our families with poverty wages,
when Republicans try to make it harder for people to vote with policies like voter ID,
and when big corporations buy our elections to advance their power,
when big oil companies like Dakota Access try to steal our land and destroy indigenous sovereignty,
while polluting our water and destroying our planet,
when greedy banks trap us in a system of debt and poverty with payday loans and subprime mortgages,
when political kingpins like Bruce Rastatter and the Board of Regents raise tuition, expanding the paralyzing cycle of student debt,
when big pharma and insurance companies try to take away our access to health care,
when our governor closes our mental health facilities throughout the state of Iowa,
when we finally realize that the only politicians we can agree with 100%, we run for office,
nos postulamos,
we take over,
tomamos las riendas,
we rise up,
nos levantamos,
we build an Iowa that works for all of us.
We rise up!
We are young, old, rural, urban, black, white, brown, LGBTQ, veterans, and everything in between.
We can win a living wage of at least $15 an hour. Yeah. We can have an independent family farm system that is healthy for soil and healthy for communities. We can end racial profiling and attacks on people of color. We can transition to 100% renewable energy and create good-paying green jobs while we do it. We can build communities where everyone is welcome, where everyone has food in the fridge, and everyone can go to the doctor when they're sick.
This is our Iowa.
Welcome to CCI Action's 2017 convention, Revolution Iowa, from protest to power.
We're listening to Voices from Revolution Iowa, an event that took place last Saturday in Des Moines. On Monday's local talk, we played a segment from the keynote speech by Senator Bernie Sanders. After his speech, Senator Sanders answered questions that had been submitted in advance to CCI via social media.
So Eric asks, I am running for school board in my community right now. What advice do you have for me and others seeking local nonpartisan elected offices in Iowa in terms of campaigning and then holding these offices?
First of all, Eric, congratulations. One of the great things that we're seeing all over this country is lots of people getting involved in the political process who a few years ago would not have thought of that. And we're seeing people running for city council, for school board, for state legislature in a way that we have not previously seen, and in many cases are doing really, really well. So my answer is what I've always believed. The way you win elections and the way you make change is not through 30-second TV ads, but it is by knocking on doors and talking to people. And I'm glad you're running for school board, because too often we are not paying the kind of attention that we should to education at the local level. And I think when you knock on doors and you talk about your desire to have high-quality education for all kids and the importance of education today, and maybe talking about moving toward affordable or free child care within school systems throughout this state, I think you're going to find a whole lot of people nodding their heads, whether they're Republicans, Independents, or Democrats. So my major suggestion to you is work hard, knock on every door in your district, you'll win the election.
So next we have a question from Karen Finn of Creston. So Karen asks, what can I as an individual citizen do each and every day to have the ideas you expressed be formed into laws?
I think the answer, Karen, in a deep sense, is to use our imagination and rethink our role in society. In other words, we've all, you know, you turn on the television and we watch it, and the implication is we're supposed to be good little people and do what we're told to do and not cause trouble and so forth and so on. But if you are a patriot, as everybody is in this room, and you love this country, we got to think about the roles that we play at every level of society. It's not just writing a letter to the editor. It's maybe asking why more progressive voices are not being heard in the media. It's running for the school board. It's running for the state legislature. It is participating, bringing people together at the local level and say to your state representative, look, we got 100 people who want to hear from you. And if you don't have the guts to confront us, you aren't going to be supported next time around. In other words, raise the stakes. Rethink your role in a democratic society. The truth is that when we stand together, we are very, very powerful. Never forget that. Never forget that. Your job in any and every way you can is to bring people together, raise issues that other people are not talking about, force discussion, and create the kind of vibrant democracy that we need to see.
That was Bernie Sanders responding to questions at Revolution Iowa last Saturday in Des Moines. KHOI reporter Ursula Rudenberg also interviewed participants to hear why they were there. Kevin and Paris, two conference participants, spoke with Ursula about their experiences becoming involved in activism and building support for movements.
I'm from Ottumwa, Iowa. I was at the rally in Cedar Rapids a few weeks ago at U.S. Cellular building. President Trump was speaking. There was about 400 of us there protesting outside the building against President Trump. This was the first time that I've ever been active politically. And frankly, to see 300 or 400 protesters and see 7,000 or 8,000 supporters of Donald Trump walk by us, it was humiliating. maybe I'm naive, but I expected several thousand from Indivisible Iowa to be there and support the protest. That didn't happen, and it was very disheartening to me. The 10,000 members of Indivisible Iowa, the 4,000 or 5,000 members of the CCI, and we have other many splinter progressive groups across the state of Iowa, and together they would equal thousands and thousands and thousands. Why don't these people show up? If they're committed enough to make a statement on Facebook, they need to be committed enough to physically show up and show their support for their beliefs and for their ideals and their support for the progressive movement against a conservative movement. It's too easy in the confines of your own home to sit in front of your laptop or your desktop where nobody can see you, write a Facebook message, hit enter, and then it's gone. And you can talk big stuff on Facebook. If you're going to be committed, you need to see it through to the end. And that means support when the group needs support. The urgency is, for me, is that our current political system is an absolute mess. It's not going to hurt me because I'm retired and I'm of the age where I've already got a third of my life left to live if my health holds up. But I have 6 children, I have 9 grandchildren, 3 great-grandchildren. This is all going to affect them. The lack of EPA, climate change, the taking off regulations from Wall Street and the big banks, giving tax breaks to the top 1%, the wealthy, the healthcare product that the Senate is ready to put out. As a social worker for 30 years, I know too many people that aren't cheating the system. The folks that I worked with genuinely needed the help, and taking Medicaid away from them is just going to deteriorate their needs.
My name is Paris Bame, and I live in Historic Valley Junction in West Des Moines, Iowa. We need to establish relationships, and to do that not by organizing tens of hundreds or thousands of people. We do that just like you and I sitting here over a cup of coffee, Kevin. That's how we do that. And just asking questions. I think it's absolutely imperative to join forces with a system, with an organized structure that resonates with you. And sometimes it changes. What I do is I'm a member of CCI. I went back to teaching part-time, teaching ESL refugees, so I could become more actively involved in that. I sell real estate, so I'm really involved in advocating for all people with that in a different way than what most people think about with realtors. And also I sit on the board, I serve on the board for Community Housing Initiatives, which is Iowa's largest nonprofit affordable housing rental organization. I also sit on our Historic Valley Junction Foundation.
You work through various community building organizations?
Yes, because that gives me the opportunity to have more enlightened conversations about what's really happening, and then to engage people, you know, in a cup of coffee or something. It's all about one-on-one relationship.
So, Kevin, what is your message to our radio audience?
My message is pretty simple. Get out there and do something. This is the first time in my life that I've ever become politically active. And you have to take the step. It's scary. I was unsure of myself. I've been to several groups where I felt like I was standing in the corner all by myself, but it's getting better. The more I do it, the better it gets. Don't hesitate. Get involved. I am 100% behind what I am doing right now.
This is Local Talk on KHOI, and we are bringing you the sounds of Revolution Iowa, an event organized by Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement last weekend.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know? talking about a revolution sounds. We're people gonna rise up, get there, yeah. We're people gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. It's finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. It's finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Talking about a revolution, oh, while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Starting to turn, talking about a revolution. It's finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Oh, no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, no.
That was Talking About a Revolution by Tracy Chapman. And we're listening to sounds from Revolution, Iowa, last Saturday in Des Moines. In addition to keynote speeches by Senator Bernie Sanders and Alicia Garza, there were also workshops that participants could choose from throughout the day. One of the workshop presenters was Tom Philpott, an investigative food and farm reporter with Mother Jones. He spoke about how we can use the media to change hearts and minds and advance our vision for a just and sustainable food system.
I really honestly cannot say how excited I am to be here. Here in the very, very epicenter, the heart of industrial agriculture, and to see this sort of liberated space here of people at the very center, at the very front, at the sort of bleeding edge, having their air and water fouled by these operations, saying no and pushing back. And there's two things. It's seeing on the ground this thing that I write about, these massive monocrops of two crops, corn and soybeans, that gigantic, enormous feedlots, capos, smelling them, all that is something that I need to see since I write about it. And but what really, really gets me is the energy to push back against it. So that's how I wanted to begin, by saying thank you so much for inviting me here. As I said earlier on the floor, we're talking about here are these extremely dominated markets, these extremely consolidated markets. There are a couple of deals. I guess the Dow DuPont deal has been officially approved. I think the Monsanto Bayer deal is inevitable. And when that happens, you're going to have three companies that dominate 70%, upwards of 70% of the, not U.S., and not GMO seeds, but the global seed market, not just for GMOs, but for all seeds, and a similar proportion of pesticides. And so it gives these companies a very, very strong economic interest in maintaining the status quo, and it also gives them a lot of profits to capture. And as I said before, they are, I think, very smart in understanding media and how media works. And so they create narratives, and creating narratives is sort of like, for them, it's sort of like fertilizing the field, to fertilizing public opinion with the idea that their way of doing things is the only way of doing things. And if we don't do things like this, then people are going to starve. And so they create lots of narratives, but I'm going to just focus on what I see right now from my little perch as the three dominant ones, the three most important ones to push back on. The three dominant themes, I think, are that biotech and enormous CAFOs are necessary. And when I say biotech, I mean the sort of whole package that goes along with it. Seeds engineered to withstand herbicides, seeds that create their own pesticides, all of that sort of as a package. These are necessary to feed the 9 billion. And if you don't support them and if you don't believe in them, then you want people to starve. You want the poor to starve. That's one of the dominant themes. The second one, I think, has been also really, really powerful. And that is that scientific agriculture, applying science to agriculture, results in that system that I just mentioned. And then the third one, we'll get to why this happened, this narrowing of the debate that happened, I would put it around 2013, hyper-focusing on whether you're going to kill over dead if you eat a kernel of GMO corn, and if that's not going to happen, then what's the problem? Then debate is over. So those are the three themes that I'm going to go through.
As previously mentioned, one of the keynotes at Revolution Iowa was Alicia Garza, founder of Black Lives Matter. In between workshops, KHOI reporter Joy B. caught up with Alicia for a quick question.
Is there anything that you didn't have the opportunity to say that you would like to tell Iowans?
Yeah, I think the big thing that I really think is important for people to know is that it is incredible that there are so many people who are going to marches and going to protests that get kind of spontaneously called. It's a really good way for people to get their energy out and make their voices heard. But we have to make sure that we sustain this energy. And the only way I think that's possible is through being a part of organizations like Iowa CCI, really coming up with what's the strategy that we're going to use to tackle this problem once and for all. It's important that we raise our voices, but we have to do so much more than that. And there's so many great resources here in this state, like Iowa CCI, that can really help us understand, well, why is this happening, and what can we do to make sure it never happens again?
Joy also interviewed a few participants at Revolution Iowa, including one of the candidates for governor.
Hi there. My name is Kathy Glosson, and I live in Coralville, Iowa, but I'm traveling the state because I'm a candidate for the governor's race in Iowa running as a Democrat. I'm a CCI member, so the initial opening of the convention is awesome. There's about 1,000 activist leaders here today that are talking about the issues that matter to Iowans. You know, we want universal health care, single-payer Medicare for all. We're talking about climate and environment and clean water for every Iowan. We're talking about raising wages and workers' rights. It's all the issues that we all care about, and it's just been a really inspiring morning to hear the speakers and then the breakout sessions to learn more about each of those topics. I'm running on a campaign that's talking about lifting Iowans up. I wasn't going to run for office at all. I wasn't in my master plan as a nurse and union leader. But what happened in the last legislative session here in Iowa really, the things that happened were so bad that I decided I had to step up and do something about it. So I am running on raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. We have to lift the wage in Iowa if we're going to ever create good-paying jobs and have have businesses come attract and offer workers higher wages and benefits so they can take care of themselves and their families. We also need to make sure, I'm a union leader, so we need to make it easier to join and form a union because unions are the thing that help families lift themselves out of poverty and have a better life. And then the third thing is ensuring every Iowan has universal health care, which means Medicare for all, coverage for all, including mental health, because closures of the mental health clinics, the women's health clinics, the privatization of Medicaid have been a catastrophe here in this state, as well as clean water and climate change. Extremely important issues. That's what I'm running on. I'm very clear on my message, and I'm a bold progressive because we need bold progressive change, not incremental change.
My name is Diane Rosenberg. I'm from Fairfield, Iowa. I really enjoyed listening to Tom Philpott, and I see firsthand how the corporate industry really dominates the conversation and how we really need to retake that narrative through science, The Iowa Alliance for Responsible Agriculture has a website that has a lot of important studies on how CAFOs impact all aspects of life. That website is cleaniowanow.org.
Hi, I'm Christine, and I'm from Des Moines, Iowa. I grew up and was raised here in the state of Iowa. I've been gone for 35 years and just returned the past couple years, and I'm pleased to see a little bit of movement in what I think is the right direction. Also, I think we could be a lot more progressive as far as our clean water. We should be leading the way by example with industrial agriculture, and it's just an embarrassment that our rivers and our water are so polluted that we're one of the worst in the country, and we should be leading instead of, you know, behind. There's 20 million pigs in Iowa, and annually in the United States, that produces about 57 million tons of pig waste, and there's about 66 million pigs in the United States. So when you do the math, you can see that it's not sustainable for the soils and the water to absorb, even if you're doing the proper landscaping to absorb the manure and so forth. It's a huge carbon problem, too, which is another climate change issue.
This is Local Talk on KHOI, and we've been bringing you the voices and sounds of Revolution Iowa, an event organized by Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement last weekend. In the last set of comments by CCI members, there were several references to confined feeding operations and manure and water quality concerns associated with them. This issue arose in a more local context this past week when the Story County Board of Supervisors held a discussion about a CAFO in Story County. The meeting was on Tuesday in Nevada, and Greta Anderson, a KHOI reporter, attended that meeting. First, we'll hear Greta speak with the farmer who was asking for a change in the master matrix for his operation. The master matrix is a scoring system used to evaluate permits for confined feeding operations.
When the acronym CAFO is used, most people think of hogs. CAFO stands for Confined Animal Feeding Operation. But hogs were not the topic at a recent Story County Supervisors meeting at which a CAFO was being discussed. Cattle are also raised in confined feeding operations, and the county's largest such cattle facility appealed to the supervisors on Tuesday to approve changes to its master matrix plan. Here's company owner Bill Kauser of Nevada.
Well, basically, I needed to change my matrix because of what's happened in the last 5 or 6 years. The rules and regulations have changed, and we just felt it imperative that we change our operation to conform with that. So we've gone to no-till, we've gone to some different practices here, and 200A now is in legislation. And so now today we can take some of these manure products that we've had and we can actually sell them through a broker and have them custom applied in other parts. So we can move these nutrients out where they belong. So sometimes we don't have enough land for all our manure to cover. So we can sell that and get a value stream down the road.
And this item on the agenda was to approve the change in your master matrix plan.
Yes, anytime you change a master matrix, you actually have to go through back through the IDNR and get a construction permit. Now, we didn't construct anything or we didn't add any more animals, but that's just a procedure we had to go through. And then we revisit the master matrix and we take away some points where we wanted to take off, and then we add some back in to get the 440 points. Basically, what it's going to do, it's going to allow me options to utilize my manure for different things. Now, whether we decide to compost it, bag it, sell it, use it on our own farmland, whatever, this opens up the window for another revenue stream for me and other farmers like myself to be able to come up with other ideas as technology changes and the uses and the ways we can apply manure to our fields in a safe manner.
The Kauser Cattle Company's new master matrix was approved unanimously, with no audience members speaking out against the changes. In fact, the supervisors' meeting room was packed with at least 24 farmers and neighbors supportive of the Kausers. That very morning, in Des Moines, the Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, or ICCI, along with other like-minded organizations representing small farmers and the environment, presented a petition to the state's Environmental Protection Commission, or EPC, to tighten the Mast Matrix system, which allows farmers to pick and choose which regulations they will follow. According to those organizations, the matrix developed by the DNR has proven so easy to pass that it amounts to little more than a rubber stamp. Applicants only need to satisfy enough of the listed criteria to obtain 50% of the available points. In fact, DNR records show that only 2.2% of applications have been denied. Interestingly, after Bill Kowser's new master matrix was approved on Tuesday, comments by Kowser and audience members led to a discussion of ICCI and its tactics of direct protest. Bill Kowser spoke about the experiences of his wife Nancy, who is one of the 9 members of the board that oversees the Iowa DNR and its master matrix program, the Environmental Protection Commission. You will hear Supervisor Loris Olson responding to him. She was asked to explain the tactics and mindset of ICCI.
You know, since we're talking about ICCI, it's been very challenging for me. Nancy's been on the EPC commission for 6 years. She's been escorted to her car by highway patrolmen 5 times because of her safety. If you could take a message back to those people that, you know, I would sit down in front of anybody in the room, as long as you're not yelling and screaming right off the bat, and bring science and facts to me. But when you start picking on my wife, and, I mean, she's gotten really thick-skinned over the years, but that's the reason we can't keep some of these people on those great commissions. I mean, it's governor-appointed position, because it's so difficult when people come in yelling and screaming and bring their kids in. It's horrible. And so how do we change that movement so that when they come in and sit down, it's a meeting?
I did pass on your comments after you made them to me, Bill, about her concern for personal safety. And I passed that on to someone in the state organizing
chapter. Thank you.
Okay. I think, I know, and it's one of the reasons I'm a member, is because there are some boards, some commissions, that look like it's stacked one way, that it's maybe not an equal representation, okay? And so they feel that in order to be heard, they need to go to bringing in their children and bringing in and creating that different environment. So that is one thing about it. And let's face it, in this state, there is a very powerful lobbying effort, the Farm Bureau. And so, you know, they're looking at the tactics and ways that they can help become an equal partner in that dialogue. I don't think they feel like an equal partner right now in the dialogue. So I think it doesn't justify that Nancy would ever be afraid, feel afraid to walk to her.
It's not just Nancy. I use her as the example. Yeah. Because we've been, you know, this EPC commission has been, and it's governor appointed, so when you say it's stacked, I don't agree with that. There's both sides put on that commission. Now, whether you agree or disagree with that, that's fine. But my whole point is here, through yelling and protesting, and you go to an open hearing meeting like that, that's just not the way we do things in Iowa. We can stop.
Yeah, I know, because it will take a little. But I'd be happy to have coffee with you and some others to discuss that about where different levels of empowerment come from.
For the record, the Environmental Protection Commission includes employees of Monsanto and Cargill, the president of the National Pork Producers Council, the former president of the Iowa Pork Producers Council, and includes no environmental scientists or professional advocates for the environment. After the meeting, I asked Bill Kowser about the discussion of ICCI.
As the discussion progressed, there was some reference to larger issues, larger debates that were going on, that are going on in the state of Iowa about the utilization of manure and the production of manure at confined feeding operations. Can you explain your perspective on how that debate arises out of your particular instance?
Well, I think it arises out of our instance because there aren't many CAFOs, you might say, in Story County, confined feeding operations.
So when we look at what happens here, it's more of an educational thing. It's important that we help educate our border supervisors and the people around us of what we actually mean. I mean, we have a permit. We can have so many animals on that land at a certain time. And we get out to our neighbors, like we just hosted what we call an S-14 party the other night, because we wanted to make sure our neighbors knew what we were doing. And we just went down the road 3 miles. We had 18 homes on our road that we invited, and families to come in and show them what we're doing. So that it's all about the smell. You know, if people couldn't smell us, they probably wouldn't worry about it. But until they can take the smell out of manure, it's going to be an issue. And we have to make sure that we're due diligent with soil health and runoff, that this doesn't get into our streams and waters. And as Gene Tinker spoke the other day, he says, you know, we have fish in these streams that we didn't used to have fish in these streams because of some of those issues. So we are moving forward.
What do you say to, for instance, Iowa CCI members who note that the number of degraded waterways has increased year after year despite efforts and public relations efforts of Farm Bureau and other and the farmers themselves?
But it's important that ICCI understands what the word degraded means, because that's on a scale also. And when you go down that list, it's not basically impaired waters every place. There's something else that's going on there.
Can you explain what you mean?
When you go back to what degraded means, why did that stream get degraded? Is it because of a bank that's eroded? I mean, when they, it's so broad. It's like everybody.
I guess the actual word is impaired waterways.
Impaired waterways.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, what actually happened there? Is the bank caving off? I mean, there's different reasons they call it an impaired waterway. It's not because it's not fishable or swimmable.
Okay, although I can tell you that there's not much that's swimmable in this state.
Okay.
How many cows do you have on your farm?
I'm permitted for 5,200.
And is that all at once?
That's a one-time capacity, yes.
And how many acres do the 5,200 cattle live on?
How many acres do they live on? The buildings are set up on 20 acres.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Bill Kauser. So it looks like you had a good day, and some of those neighbors came back to the Story County Supervisors meeting today.
Yeah, I was very proud of who showed up and the support that we got here. But Story County should be like that. We're an agricultural community.
Meanwhile, Loris Olson is serious about her efforts to establish dialogue between industrial farmers and concerned citizens in Story County. If you are interested in joining her and others over coffee to discuss these issues, contact her through her supervisor webpage. We'll link to that when we post the story on our website, khoifm.org. For Local Talk, I'm Greta Anderson.
Thanks to Greta Anderson for that report and for the follow-up on some of the issues around industrial farming that ICCI raised at its convention. It's interesting to hear a farmer's perspective on those issues. It seems to be a recurring theme to call for more civility and less aggressive tactics by citizen activists like ICCI encourages. But as was mentioned in the piece we heard, vocal and strident opposition is often the only way those who are not in positions of power feel that they can make themselves heard by those who are in power.
Get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove. Got a plan to get us out of here. Been working at the convenience store. Managed to save just a little bit of money. Won't have to drive too far. Just cross the border and into the city. You and I can both get jobs and finally see what it means to be living. See, my old man's got a problem.
Yeah, with the bottle, that's the way it is. He says his body's too old for working. His body's too young to look like his. My mama went off and left him. She wanted more from life than he could give. I said, somebody's got to take care of him. So I quit school, and that's what I did. Get a fast car. Is it fast enough so we can fly away? We gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way. So I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. Speed so fast, it felt like I was drunk. City lights stay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belong. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. We go cruise and entertain ourselves. Still ain't got a job. Now work in the market as a checkout girl. I know things will get better. You'll find work and I'll get promoted. We'll move out of the shelter, buy a bigger house and live in the suburbs. So I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. Speed so fast it felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us. Your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged.
That was Fast Car by Tracy Chapman. Evan was commenting that that sounds like a soundtrack to his parents' summer road trip tape. I'm going to say tape because that's probably what I would have included it on as well. But it's true. That's definitely a song from my era, and it's a song that I think is a good road trip song. So for those people going on road trips this weekend with their kids, play that song and drive your kids crazy. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've been joined by Alex Pfeiffer from the Ames Historical Society. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Ames Historical Society is our next-door neighbor, so
yeah,
to speak, right close by on Douglas.
Yeah, right in our little cultural corridor we kind of talk about we have down here.
That's right. It's a great place to be. And you're here to talk about a couple different things, but the first thing is a speaker that you have coming in next week. So why don't we start with that?
Yeah, we're starting. This is the first of one of our history talks. So maybe we just ended our lecture series, which we've had going on for 10 years. But this is something a little bit different. These are usually themed in conjunction with our current exhibit up. So they're all going to be World War II themed. So this one particularly is going to be about a B-17 bomber crash that happened in Story County back in 1944. I had never heard of this.
Who knew?
Yeah, who knew? Yeah, it was in the Maxwell area. So this will be presented by Matt Donovan, who is the Iowa DOT archaeologist and historian. And he just did a program for us last month on prehistoric Story County. That was really interesting. So this one I've been waiting for. This one he came to us about a year ago and said, I have this program ready to go. You just tell me when and where. And we kind of inadvertently, without thinking about that, started doing a World War II exhibit. So it worked out perfectly. So he's going to come in and talk about this B-17 bomber. So we're talking March 1944. And this bomber came out of Kearney, Nebraska, doing some flight training, and it got lost in a snowstorm. And so he's going to talk about kind of the area it was found in, recollections from the family. There was a family that lived in a farm nearby that witnessed the crash from their house, seeing the explosion. And so he's going to talk a little bit about that, talk a lot about his process of what they do now, you know, 50, uh-huh, 60 years later when they go to these sites to go see what's left. So he's going to talk a little bit about that, some of the reports that came from the military there. I think it's just going to be one of those really interesting talks that you're just going to be like, wow. Who knew this happened in the Ames area?
Yeah, I certainly didn't. And I also didn't know that the Department of Transportation has an archaeologist.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's, every time they go do a project, you know, they tear up some land to put on a new highway, they have to be, you know, very careful, especially about Native American artifacts and anything else that has historical significance. So they always do a survey and that kind of thing before they do any kind of major project. In fact, we had a local woman, Maria Pearson, known as Running Moccasins, I believe. And she was from the Ames area here, or she lived here for a while, and she worked with the DOT back in, I think, the 80s, back when Branstad's mustache was a little darker. they worked together. And so she was working on, I believe, a project over near the Iowa City area. So, yeah, they've been doing this for quite a few years through the DOT, making sure that they're not, you know, disrupting things that are culturally significant to the Native Americans, especially.
That makes sense. Yeah, they would need to pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to this talk, the plane, as far as you know, crashed because of the storm primarily?
I don't know for sure.
Okay.
That's something we're going to have,
so
you're going to have to come in
to
and find out. Some of it, the weather played a part, being a snowy, kind of blizzardy night. But we're going to find it. I don't even know if they know what happened, to be honest.
And they maybe don't have the same kinds of recording systems, like the black box kind of thing.
Yeah, that is one thing. I did talk to Matt last week. That was one thing he's going to talk about, kind of pre-black box era aviation archaeology. And how, what do you find out when you don't have that tape running that whole time?
Yeah, interesting.
Mm-hmm,
cool.
For sure.
And so tell us when and where this talk is.
Yes, that'll be Tuesday. So it's just coming up next week, July 25th. It'll be 7 p.m. at the Ames Public Library, Farwell T. Brown Auditorium. So it's the auditorium right up kind of by the front of the building there.
And the title of the talk is?
It'll be B-17 Bomber Crash in Story County in 1944 with Matt Donovan.
All right. History buffs, aviation buffs, World War II buffs might take advantage of this.
Yep. Everybody, come on down.
Okay. And you said this is in conjunction with your current exhibit.
Yeah, currently we have up right now World War II, Ames doing its part. So it's all about what was going on in the Ames area during the war years. So we talk about, I'm sure most people are probably familiar with the then secret project of the Manhattan Project research on Iowa State. And if you aren't, they were basically secretly developing a way to refine uranium, which was the fuel for the atom bomb. So and the Ames plant here actually supplied, I believe, almost all of the uranium for the first test that they did at the University of Chicago. And so we kind of refined the process here and then found the best way to refine it. And then they put that off to places like Los Alamos and that. So we were kind of a testing ground to do the larger project there. So we're talking about like stuff like that. We had a company that was located just across the street in the Octagon Arts Center known as Collegiate Manufacturing Company. And maybe some of you remember them back in the 80s coming to go buy reject t-shirts that they used to do sales for every year. They mainly made college pennants, sweatshirts, stuffed animals. But the war hit, and just like Ford switching over to making tanks, they started making raincoats. So they had all these seamstresses and sewing machines, so they started making raincoats.
For the Army
quartermasters.
Uh-huh.
So they completely switched over production there. So some businesses, we get the university tied in, what's going that. Also information about blackouts tests that they were doing. We were part of a 9-state blackout test here, so it's interesting to hear how successful and unsuccessful that was in the area. And just a little bit of everything. We have a little mini victory garden we made that's kind of attached to a little 40s-era kitchen we kind of designed. So you can kind of step into that a little bit and kind of get the feel for people canning back in the day.
Yeah, that's cool. So it could be of interest to adults, but also children might enjoy seeing something like that in particular.
Oh, definitely, yeah. We get a lot of kids that come in and they're learning about rationing. So we have, like, the rationing books and having to tell kids about, you know, unless you had a job that made you travel, you couldn't buy new tires, or you only got a certain amount, so many gallons of gas a month, and you had to turn in these little stickers, otherwise they would not give you gas, or these little token coins. And so we get a lot of kid groups that are researching that call us all the time about rationing. So it's something that we definitely haven't experienced in the last couple wars around here.
We've forgotten about those kinds of hardships.
Definitely.
And this exhibit, it goes until when?
That'll be up until the end of September, so you got a little bit of time. You can, you know, come to our gallery talks over the library and then come down and check out what we got in the exhibit. We have a little bit of a connection to, we have the bomber crash lecture next week. Another thing that was going on during World War II at Iowa State College was the civilian flight training program. So this is in the September of 1939. So we're talking 2 years before the war. So things were going on in Europe, clearly, but it hadn't quite hit the U.S. You know, Pearl Harbor wasn't for another 2 years. So at that point, they the government got 166 colleges and universities to participate in this civilian flight training program. And the only requirement was that you didn't have to be in the military. You had to be enrolled at Iowa State, and you had to have a 2.0 grade average. So make sure you got your studies up. And so they would do some flying, and then when the war hits, it eventually turns into an actual war training program. So some of these gentlemen that got in early, like the first 40 men graduated in 1940, some of them went off to, you know, go fight in the Royal Air Force, do other things, you know, would go fight overseas so they could get some flying experience. And this kind of eventually, these guys were training on like East 13th Street, kind of close to the disease lab in that area. But then they eventually, the program gets so big that in 43, they move south of town to a newly constructed airport, which eventually gets morphed into our municipal airport. So it's kind of the story of how we got that municipal airport. Before that, we kind of had a few little scattered airports. It was more whoever had a plane, had the money, kind of just put a little
put a landing strip in.
Yeah, they weren't cement or anything. It was just a little grass runway. Just on, you know, all the skirts of town, wherever you can. In fact, Nita Snook, who was a woman pilot here back in the 20s, she used to land her plane near Hilton Coliseum in that little floodplain. So it's just like wherever you can put it down.
Huh.
But it eventually morphed into combining all those into one airport south of town.
Yeah. And when you were talking about the flight training program, you said men. Were there no women involved in that official program that you know of?
Not that I read doing the research, going through the newspaper articles talking about it.
Well, yeah,
at least
time,
at Iowa
I guess
State,
it's
yeah,
not surprising.
No, there is a lot of great history about women flying during World War II. I believe there was a group out in the East Coast. We helped slightly with the documentary a couple years ago, and it's tying into our Nita Snook, female pilot.
Uh-huh.
But I can't remember the name of that group. But I think it was at Iowa State. I've never heard of that. Now, Iowa State Special Collections maybe does have some research on that, possibly, but 166 colleges and universities participating. You hope there was a couple women involved there.
That would be
there.
Interesting
be great.
To find out. So, tell us when people can come to that exhibit. What are the hours the Ames Historical Society is open?
We're open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 4. And I also want to put people an invite out to, we're also having our annual benefit dinner come on August 26th. That's a Saturday. So this is, again, World War II themed. We're going to throw kind of a little mini USO show. We got a band that's going to come play some 40s music. So we're going to have some cocktails and a silent auction to help benefit the Historic Society. And also a local woman, Jane Cox, if you're familiar with her, she wrote a book and kind of a one-person play called Heroes Among Us. And it's the story of World War II stories written by the actual people and kind of put them into a little play to get their experience. So she's got some, I believe, ISU students that are going to come and recreate the Ames stories out of that book. So that's going to be really great. So if you want to come check that out, you can stop by the Historic Society, get your tickets, visit our website, ameshistory.org. You can purchase them on there. And there's a little bit more information if you'd like to know more.
All right. That sounds fun. And people can come dressed for the 1940s?
Yes, it
that
is. It's 40s costumes. Yep.
Okay.
I got my tie, my hat. I'm looking for some slacks yet.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in, Alex. Always interesting things we don't know about the area, and good to keep apprised of upcoming events.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. We've been talking with Alex Pfeiffer from the Ames Historical Society. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to the reporters who brought us stories from Revolution, Iowa last weekend, and to Greta Anderson for the story on confinement feeding in Story County. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. So please support KHOI. It's very easy to donate or become a member. Just go to our website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means you can be part of our team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you would like to join the team, contact us at 515-292-2878 or through our website. Please remember to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and stay tuned to KHOI because coming up next is Democracy Now! And national news headlines from Pacifica Radio. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday